CRDB, HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
USA Radio News.
The FBI acknowledged that some protocols were not followed after they obtained a tip in January that shooting suspect Nicholas Cruz had a potential of conducting a school shooting. Meanwhile, a former classmate of Cruz is coming out speaking about some of the things he did in his past school years.
I used to always hear stories about him throwing rocks through windows, pulling the fire alarm for fun. No one was really too close to him because it was always assumed that if this were to happen, it'd be him. Someone having the ability to instill that much terror in the people I love hurts.
The FBI said the caller had provided them with information about Cruz's gun ownership, desire to kill people, erratic behavior, and disturbing social media posts in January. Former Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney announced today that he will be running for a U.S. Senate seat being left vacant by retiring GOP Senator Orrin Hatch. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn Root. I was one of the biggest critics of Obama in the national media. Suddenly, I was under massive IRS attack. So I hired Sam Landis. Sam did an amazing job. We won twice. I didn't owe a penny. Thank you, Sam Landis. Many of you have IRS problems, and you've spent thousands with non-lawyer tax resolution firms. Do yourself a favor. Call Sam Landis for a free consultation. Trust me, Sam Landis is the best. Sam saved my life. Call Sam at 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. That's toll-free, 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. 800-WE-HELP-YOU.
Howdy, folks. Colonel Sanders here to tell you about KFC's $10 chicken shares. They're perfect to share with those special people in your life. Choose from 6 pieces of my Kentucky Fried Chicken, 9 extra crispy tenders, 12 hot wings, or a bunch of popcorn nuggets. So grab your buddy, your cousin, your dad, your college roommate, or my friend Joan, and head to KFC. Are you there yet? Okay, good. Now get to sharing and eating. KFC's $10 chicken shares. It's finger-licking good.
At participating KFCs only. Hot wings not available at all locations. Prices may vary. Tax and substitutions extra.
The fate of a bipartisan immigration bill hangs in the balance as yesterday the Senate rejected 4 different immigration bills. But where do we go from here? Congressman Tom Reed says it's all about compromise.
If this is going to be addressed, I think you're going to have kind of a middle ground type of bipartisan agreement. Now, I'm not very optimistic as to what I hear out of the Senate and anything coming out of the Senate, so therefore that doesn't bode well for the future of solving this.
The congressman from New York then continues by talking about the 2 main issues that need to be solved here.
Taking care of the kids that are part of that dreamer population, I think that we can solve that and allow them to have the American opportunity, American dream. But we also have to secure the border. And if you limit it to those 2 items alone, I think there is a solution that can be forged together here.
The Justice Department today announced indictments on 13 Russian nationals and a trio of Russian entities on charges related to the Kremlin's effort to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. This is USA Radio News.
In theaters now from PureFlix.
Samson, chosen by the living God.
A hero will rise.
He has the strength of a god. I saw it with my own eyes.
My name is Samson, and you will face the wrath of God.
Samson, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13. Now playing. For tickets and information, go to samson.movie.
And with a look at things going on around the world, here is USA Radio Network's UN correspondent, Luke Vargas.
An economic assessment by Smith College professor Andrew Zimbalist finds South Korea spent roughly $13 billion to host the ongoing Winter Olympics, but will generate less than $3 billion in short-term revenue. South Korea's government optimistically says hosting the Games will draw in at least $18 billion in revenue in the coming years. But Zimbalist is skeptical, saying meager ticket sales show the challenge of turning Pyeongchang into a popular international resort town. Reuters reports up to 100 Russian mercenaries may have been killed in eastern Syria last week after the U.S. responded with force to an assault on allied Kurdish fighters. In a pattern seen in eastern Ukraine, Russian mercenaries are said to be taking on an increased role across Syria. By relying on contractors instead of uniformed personnel, Russia's government is not required to report on death tolls or injuries. And Germany's foreign minister is asking the U.S. to step up its participation in transatlantic security by doing more than funding its military. The complaint that certain German allies have rolled back spending on diplomacy in the U.N. comes days after President Trump's proposed budget spelled out steep cuts at the State Department, U.N., and USAID. But Ursula von der Leyen did propose a compromise, saying Germany would increase its military spending and push others in Europe to do so. if the U.S. remained diplomatically engaged. We'll see if that message reaches Washington.
For USA Radio News, my name is Tim Berg.
Hey, Pat, did you know between the two of us, we know how to screw in a light bulb?
Come on, Steve. We can do better than that. Well, at least I can. Tell you what, you sit there and look pretty, and I'll fix it.
Listen to you, big guy. Better yet, let's get everyone to listen to Home Sweet Home with me, Steve Bailey, Inspector with Brass Tack Home Inspections.
And I'm Pat Gregory, Handyman Extraordinaire with Taskman Home Improvements, every Friday at 11 a.m. Or you can go to our archives and get access to over 50 podcasts. We cover the basement to the attic and everything in between.
You can even call us at 908-237-0410 during our radio program about our home improvement projects. Remember, Home Sweet Home, every Friday at 11 on Huntington Chamber Radio.
From the basement to the attic, you're listening to Steve and Patrick. Home Sweet Home.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Huntington Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-ah! Today we're talking about the Mideast and Israel and good stuff like that. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us. Joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is co-host Air Force vet Josh Lang. What's going on, Josh?
I see you gentlemen are all here in one piece today. That means you must not have screwed up Valentine's Day too badly. Good job. Now, let's get to work.
You're terrible. I don't know why I work with you. You're funny. Anyway, thanks, Josh. Talk to you later. Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby looks serious. We'll hear from him as he shares warrant wisdom. And Marine Vet Skip Coriel is here, just looking happy. What's up, Skip?
Well, Colonel, I didn't announce this to you yet, but I've run out of firewood, so I have decided unilaterally to cancel the remainder of winter.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I know a number of my neighbors would support that.
Well, there's a downside. I'm just a non-com, so I only have the authority to cancel it just for my 20 acres that I live on.
Well, I'll just grant you some extended authority.
Okay.
What a good idea. Anyway, here's what we have for you today. On News and Comment by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss Israel's new involvement in the Mideast War. Then my West Point classmate, retired Army Colonel Bud Henry, commanded a rifle company in the Korean Demilitarized Zone in the late 1960s. There's been a lot of interest in the DMZ, so Bud will discuss his year there. Then geek Tom Kelly will discuss cybersecurity, and Army Reserve Lieutenant Colonel and JAG John Mayer will join us to discuss the situation with First Lieutenant Clint Lawrence and how we can help, because he deserves it. And retired Army Chaplain Steve Huckema will discuss how chaplains are selected.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We really do welcome your input to the show. Send your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or even Facebook. Now it's time for a news and comment by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. First, the news. Lead out, Josh.
While all of the services are asking for much more money to replace worn out or missing equipment and to grow in size, the Coast Guard is asking for money for a wildly needed addition. The Coast Guard finds itself in a significantly different budget environment this year. Not only is the service requesting a sizable bump in funding, the money would help pay for its first new heavy icebreaker in 40 years. The additional money for the fiscal year, beginning October 1st, would include $750 million for a new heavy icebreaker, slated for delivery in 2023. The funding would go toward building the nation's first new heavy polar icebreaker in over 40 years. The Coast Guard wants to replace the barely seaworthy Polar Star for Arctic missions with a fleet of 3 heavy icebreakers. Last fall, it released a draft request for proposals from potential bidders for a new heavy icebreaker design. The service also wants to build 3 medium icebreakers.
Our nation has exactly 1 fully operational deep-sea icebreaker. If it gets stuck, perhaps while resupplying research near the South Pole, which is really heavy in ice, our only alternative is to ask the Russians for help. We need more than 1 more of these big ships, but I'll guess we'll start with 1.
The nation's highest military court has thrown out the 2012 rape conviction of a Coast Guard enlisted man because admirals and prosecutors packed the 7-member jury with 5 women, 4 of whom held jobs as advocates for victims of sexual assault. In a 5-0 ruling that could change how the military conducts sex abuse trials, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces unleashed caustic criticism of all involved. From the Coast Guard Commandant down to an appellate court to the original trial judge, the High Court said all contributed to a, quote, stain on the military justice system, end quote. The 5 civilian judges noted that the military has been under intense pressure to wipe out sexual harassment and assault. The opinion, delivered by Judge Margaret Ryan, said the 4 admirals who played a role in assembling the officer and enlisted jury pool produced an illegal gender-based court stacking. She suggested that the admiral's role amounted to unlawful command influence, which military law analysts see as the enemy for fair trials for service members. The court ruling said the trial judge failed to conduct even a rudimentary investigation into the defense attorney's complaints of an unfair jury. It also said the Coast Guard Court of Criminal Appeals failed in its duty to protect against unlawful command influence.
Unlawful command influence has been a real problem in our military justice system, especially when politically correct issues are considered. That includes combat troops who are fighting the enemy properly but end up shooting an innocent person. The rules of engagement, until very recently, valued the lives of potential enemies over the lives of our troops. This is a great ruling. We need to deal with inappropriate command influence.
Our military has added the ancient holistic therapy of acupuncture to its arsenal for fighting opioid abuse in the ranks. The practice, which first originated in China about 8,000 years ago, provides immediate relief for acute and chronic pain and can be used without any restrictions without the risk of addiction. One of the most popular forms used in the military has been dubbed battlefield acupuncture, or BFA, because it's simple to administer and easily transportable, according to Dr. Richard Neitzow, who developed BFA in 2001. With BFA, service members can continue to participate, unimpaired, in work and life. Air Force Colonel Linda Vu, who recently administered BFA while deployed in Qatar, said, quote, they don't have to wait hours for medications to take maximal effect or endure side effects, like drowsiness or allergic reactions of common pain medications. This allows personnel to go back to the fight with minimal impact to continuing mission operations, end quote. Service members who use BFA can still fly aircraft, unlike those who use opiates, according to Vu. The one challenge she faces is a lack of BFA-trained physicians on deployment. For more on military acupuncture, check out the story on our Facebook page at /Frontlines of Freedom.
This is great. When I was on active duty, chiropractic care was considered foolishness despite its extremely effective results. Modern medicine must include ancient medical practices that work. Too many docs think that their job is to either cut or drug the patient. No, it's to heal them in any way that works. This is great news for military medicine.
China says it has begun introducing its J-20 stealth fighter jets into combat units in a potentially major upgrade of its Air Force capabilities. Air Force spokesman Shen Jinki said in a statement released on the service's official microblog that the move boosts China's ability to carry out the sacred mission of defending its sovereignty, security, and territorial integrity. First flown in 2011, the J-20 is China's answer to fifth-generation jets such as our F-22 Raptor and F-35 Joint Strike Fighter. It made its formal debut at a 2016 air show in southern China, and last year was featured in a military parade marking the 90th anniversary of the founding of the People's Liberation Army. The plane was developed domestically, but is believed to still rely on Russian engines for power.
As we've discussed before, China is growing its military in size and improved upgraded weaponry. They are a real threat. We have to be ready to confront them.
Japan wants Russia to cease planned military drills on an island that both nations claim, warning that this could lead to a buildup of Moscow's forces in the Pacific Ocean. The two countries have still never signed a peace deal to end World War II, because they cannot agree on who is the rightful owner of four small islands north of Japan's Hokkaido. Soviet forces took control of the islands, which it calls the South Kuril Islands, shortly before Japan surrendered to the Allies. Japan, which calls the islands the Northern Territories, has never consented to the land grab or the deportation of the island's indigenous people by Joseph Stalin. Now Russia is launching a 2,000-strong military drill on and around one of the disputed islands, which has prompted an angry backlash from Tokyo. The Russian government approved a plan to potentially militarize an airfield on one of the four islands, allowing armed forces the use of an otherwise civilian airstrip. The military has already sent anti-ship missiles to the Russian-held islands.
So Russia and China are out grabbing land in this area. This is bad news for the world. I hope our nation stands clearly and effectively against them. And that's the news. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. Coming up on Frontlines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel, then we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll be talking fighting in the Korean demilitarized zone with Colonel Bud Henry. At East Troops, take a break. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. I want to share about an incredible program available for our veterans across America who are suffering from PTS and traumatic brain injury. It's called After the Impact, and it serves our veterans and NFL football players. You know, it all started at the Eisenhower Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and is now expanded to a new facility in Jacksonville, Florida. After the Impact provides real treatment and healing in a transitional residential setting. See more about their facilities for veterans and players at EisenhowerCenter.com.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coria with your home defense tip of the week. Most home invasions occur when people are at work between the hours of 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. Because of this, we highly recommend the installation of a home security video surveillance system. These systems are easy to install and cost only a few hundred dollars. They allow you to monitor your home while you're at work via your computer or cell phone. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit HomeDefenseShow.com.
Mike Hewitt here. When I was very young, products from the United States were the best in all of the world, while similar items from places like Japan, China, Turkey, and India were considered junk. Who wanted them when Americans built so much better? Think about it. Folks, we built the best automobiles, electronics, industrial tools, household goods, textiles, and more. We had an unexcelled K-12 educational platform with the results to prove it. We competed and won in the space race. Yup, a man on the moon. We had world-class affordable health care and an affordable higher education, second to none. Folks, we absolutely must get beyond dismissing the obvious and figure out what the heck happened and fix it quickly. You can call this one common sense with a full measure of urgency. For more common sense, visit themikehewittshow.com.
Join us for a fun-filled evening at the Hunterdon County Crime Stoppers annual fundraiser, Thursday, November 16th, 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. at Lone Eagle Brewing, 44 Stangle Road, Flemington. Craft beer tasting, great food, door prizes, live music, and a 50-50 raffle. Tickets are $50 each, and sponsorship advertising opportunities are available. Please visit www.crimestoppershunterdon.com or call 908-437-0126. We'll have a barrel of fun.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. A Front Lines of Freedom salute to one of our show's sponsors, honor, and remember. Our nation must never forget those who paid the ultimate sacrifice for our freedoms. This is the mission of Honor and Remember, a nonprofit based in Virginia with support from their national sponsor, Spartan Nash, the leading distributor to U.S. commissaries and fifth largest food distributor. Learn more about how you continue the mission at honorandremember.org. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. President Trump recently restated our nation's commitment to Israel. Indeed, Israel is likely our nation's most reliable ally in the whole world, so we should stand with them. In recent years, a lot of the people in that region who hate Israel have been fighting each other in Syria, so Israel has mostly stayed out of the fighting for the last 7 years, allowing their enemies to kill each other. They occasionally made a strike if something was too threatening to them, but that was rare. If you haven't noticed, the war in Syria has taken a number of twists already this year. But this month had a really big one. Israel's military carried out a large-scale aerial attack inside Syria. There were back-and-forth clashes overnight in which an Iranian drone was shot down in Syrian territory and an Israeli F-16 was downed by Syrian anti-aircraft fire. These airstrikes suggest that Israel may soon end up sucked into a conflict that is getting increasingly chaotic after the military defeat of ISIS. If Israel does get more engaged in the fighting next door, it will likely have serious consequences for the war in Syria and for the region as a whole. What has Israel's involvement in the Syrian war been so far? Well, Israel's border with Syria is a high-risk place, the Golan Heights. I've been there. And Israel has long had openly hostile relationships with not only President al-Assad's government, but with Syria's allies, the wildly anti-Israel Iran and Lebanon's Hezbollah militia. However, Israel, until now, has had no dog in this fight, so they've not been much involved. Things have changed during 2017. ISIS lost territory, and Assad's forces and his evil allies regained control of the war. Last year, Israel pushed back against a partial ceasefire brokered by the U.S. and Russia, arguing that it allowed Iranian expansion near Israel's borders, which was true. Many in Israel reasonably feared not only that Iran and friends would establish positions near the Israeli border, but that Hezbollah had been using the Syrian fighting as sort of a training exercise, and that Iran might help the militia upgrade to the use of precision-guided missiles. So why is the Israeli strike earlier this month different than previous ones? I mean, Israel had made strikes in Syria in recent months, but this one began when Israel says an Iranian drone crossed into its territory from Syria. The Israeli military released footage that showed the drone being brought down by an attack helicopter. Israel noted that the downed drone was based on an American stealth drone that was intercepted by Iran 6 years ago. Hey, Israel should know. They work with lots of our stuff. And of course, Iran denied everything. Israel soon sent fighter jets into Syria to attack the T-4 military base from which the drone supposedly was launched. Syrian forces responded with anti-aircraft fire, which downed an Israeli jet after its crew ejected. This is the first such incident in the last 30 years, Israeli military journalist Amos Harel wrote, adding that Syria's willingness to retaliate to Israel's airstrikes showed the regime's newfound sense of power. In response, the Israeli attack struck again, targeting 12 military sites in Syria, 8 Syrian and 4, it says, were Iranian. General Tomer Bar, second in command of Israel's Air Force, said these strikes were the biggest and most significant attack the Air Force has conducted against Syrian air defenses since the 1982 Lebanon War. That's a long time. Open conflict across the Syrian border is unlikely, as it wouldn't be good for either Israel or the Iran-aligned forces stationed there at the moment. But it's clear that neither side is willing to back down. If the conflict escalates, it could greatly broaden the ongoing Syrian conflict, and it could involve other powers and regions and beyond, including more involvement for the United States. The military base struck by Israel housed not only Syrians, but Russian military officers. And it's hard to imagine that the Russians there wouldn't have known about the Iranian drone or the anti-aircraft fire. Oh, and don't forget that late last month, Netanyahu visited Moscow to push Russia to rein in its Iranian allies in Syria. Okay, remember that our nation is a key Israeli ally and is already involved in the Syrian conflict, backing the anti-government Syrian rebels, and that at times we found ourselves at odds with Russia. Further, this month, our warplanes bombed pro-government forces after they advanced on U.S.-backed forces in the eastern province of Deir al-Zor. The U.S. and Russian-backed forces had a common enemy in ISIS, but as that fight winds down to next to nothing, new conflicts are surfacing. Turkey, for example, recently launched an offensive against Kurdish fighters in Syria's north, and we are allied with some Kurdish forces against ISIS. This isn't too surprising, for the Turks hate the Kurds, but still. An open conflict between Israel and Iranian-backed forces would add to the chaos in Syria. It would also risk pulling neighboring Lebanon or other Arab states into a new war, too. Sound confusing? You bet it is. And those are my comments. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. I think he's going to talk about me. He told me it was about old technology, and that's the only kind I know anything about. Okay, Roland, do it.
You know, a weird and totally true thing about the modern world is that the President of the United States has 7,100 nuclear warheads at their command. Theorized in the 1930s and first built and used in the 1940s, these weapons shape the outer bounds of human conflict. They're powerful, they're terrible, and there's not much we can do about them. And they're waiting to end the world the moment an equal number of Russian nukes launch, or probably more likely in this day and age anyway, a rogue nation. Should that fateful day come to pass, we'll initiate the apocalypse with another similarly archonic technology, floppy disks. As the Government Accountability Office blandly noted in a 2016 report on legacy systems, the Department of Defense Strategic Automated Command and Control System, which coordinates the operational functions of the United States nuclear forces, such as intercontinental ballistic missiles, nuclear bombs, and tanker support aircraft, is woefully outdated. How outdated? The system runs on an IBM 1 Series 1 computer, a 1970s computing system. It even uses 8-inch floppy disks. Just think about this. When was the last time you actually saw a floppy disk? You know, floppy disks are probably best memorialized as a widely shaped icon denoting save on word processors. You know, I haven't used a floppy disk since at least early 2000s. And even then, it was a hard body 3.5-inch, not an 8-inch. The 8-inch floppy disks date back all the way to 1971 when Nixon was still in his first term. So why are we still using them? Well, frankly, because they work. Although B-52 bombers first rolled out of the factory in the 1950s, and many are now museum pieces, the Pentagon still flies them. So upgrading a system that does its job, frankly, is a low priority, unless there's a really compelling reason. The IBM 1 Series 1 computers, which use the disk, and even the disks themselves, are secure against attack, partially through the difficulty of accessing and replicating them. For example, USB ports and the accompanying flash drives that go in them are such an easy way to distribute malicious programs. In fact, security researchers dropped a bunch of flash drives around college campuses, and then they counted how many of them got plugged in. By the way, it's usually about 50%. So the U.S. nuclear deterrence floppies are scheduled for an upgrade in 2020. But in its place, can we expect something a lot more sophisticated? And if it is it going to be also a lot more vulnerable? I think that we'll have to wait and see. You know, sometimes old technology can be better, I guess. Just look at us old guys. Anyway, for Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby.
Thanks, Roland. You're one amazing guy. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we're going to talk about the fighting on the demilitarized. We're going to talk about fighting on the Korean demilitarized zone. Then it's cybersecurity time. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You are standing tall with the front lines of freedom. I'll be right back. Troops were doing pull-ups, so let's do 24, then stand at ease. Spartan Nash holds a special place in its heart for honor and remember. As a national partner with Honor and Remember, Spartan Nash is deeply committed to never forgetting those who paid the ultimate price in service to our country.
The flag serves as a symbol of remembrance, and Spartan Nash flies the Honor and Remember flag at all of our facilities. The flag artwork is on our fleet of tractor trailers, which travel 50 million miles each year.
Learn more at honorandremember.org.
For those who have loved ones serving in the military, waiting is a way of life, whether it's by the phone or by the computer. And waiting is not fun, especially when the waiting is for the status of an unexpected injury. Fisher Houses give families of wounded warriors receiving care at military or VA medical centers a home away from home, so they can focus not on waiting, but on being together in a time of need. Learn more at fisherhouse.org.
USA Radio News.
The FBI acknowledged that some protocols were not followed after they obtained a tip in January that shooting suspect Nicholas Cruz had a potential of conducting a school shooting. Meanwhile, a former classmate of Cruz is coming out speaking about some of the things he did in his past school years.
I used to always hear stories about him throwing rocks through windows, pulling the fire alarm for fun. No one was really too close to him because it was always assumed that if this were to happen, it'd be him. Someone having the ability to instill that much terror in the people I love hurts.
The FBI said the caller had provided them with information about Cruz's gun ownership, desire to kill people, erratic behavior, and disturbing social media posts in January. Former Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney announced today that he will be running for a U.S. Senate seat being left vacant by retiring GOP Senator Orrin Hatch. This is USA Radio News.
So 5 months ago, the folks at MyPillow said, hey, you want to try one out? Let us know what you think. Hey, it's a pillow. But I tried it. What have you got to lose? Tell you what I lost. Interrupted sleep. It changed my life. So I'm letting you know you need MyPillow. Well, not MyPillow, but your own MyPillow. See, it stays cool all night, keeps its shape, comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't like it? Return it. And a 10-year warranty. What pillow have you got that has a 10-year warranty? You can toss a MyPillow in your washer, dryer, and it's like new again. Try doing that with your dollar store pillow and see what happens. And by the way, it's made in the USA. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the 4-pack special, enter promo code USA. You'll get 2 MyPillow premium pillows and 2 go-anywhere pillows for half off. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the 4-pack special, enter promo code USA, or call 1-800-951-8175 and use promo code USA.
Troops, welcome back to the nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, do please send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. Now it's time to meet my friend and West Point classmate, retired Army Colonel Bud Henry. There's been a lot of interest about the situation on the Korean demilitarized zone since we discussed a book on the subject a few weeks ago. Well, for a year, Bud commanded a company in the DMZ, and he's got some interesting insights. So, welcome to Frontlines of Freedom, Bud.
Well, thank you for having me.
Bud, let's begin by discussing your career. Why'd you go to West Point?
Well, actually, it's a kind of an interesting story. I had wanted to go to West Point as a young man, as a high school student, and couldn't get an appointment, so I got an appointment to the Naval Academy. However, when I took my physical out at Great Lakes Naval Air, I flunked because of flat feet. Now, that's kind of funny since I ended up in the infantry. But I didn't get in the Naval Academy, thankfully, because of that. And the next year, I did get an appointment to West Point and entered in 60 with the class of 64.
Yeah, I goofed off. I entered the third college year after graduating, too. So I guess you and I are a little bit alike.
Yeah, and that probably is a good thing for me. I probably wasn't ready.
Yeah, I think the same thing about me. Okay, so you went infantry. Talk about your career. What'd you do?
Well, after graduation, the first thing we all did was went off to Fort Benning and Airborne and Ranger, and then subsequently I went to Pathfinder, and then off to the first assignment. My first assignment was the Fort Campbell. It was my assignment of choice. It was the 101st Airborne Division. So we arrived at Fort Campbell actually on the first day of 1965 and signed in. And I was assigned to the 1st Battalion 506th Infantry, a typical airborne infantry battalion, as a platoon leader. I was there with the 506 for 6 months when the 1st Brigade, which I was not in, was alerted to go to Vietnam. This was the start of the buildup in Vietnam. And I was in the 3rd Brigade, and the 1st Brigade was looking for fill because the units weren't filled, typical of any Army unit. They never have enough people. So I volunteered and went over to the 2nd Battalion, 327th Infantry, and in July, the brigade deployed to Vietnam aboard a ship, the USNS Eltinge, and with that was 13 of my West Point classmates also. We got to Vietnam. We were offloaded at Cam Ranh Bay and trucked up to around on K, and we settled in. Turns out we were really, our first assignment was to put a perimeter around the on K area as the 1st Cav Division was moving in. From that point on, we really just floated around the country since we were light infantry. We had virtually no vehicles, and we could be moved easily and plugged around anytime they needed a battalion here or there. It was an interesting first year in Vietnam, but not as exciting as it got a few years later when the buildup really hit and the North Vietnamese became more involved. So it was a good year to learn about soldiering. We did suffer casualties, but nothing as bad as what happened in the 66, 67, and 68 era and later. Upon finishing a year in Vietnam, I was sent back to Fort Ord. On the way, I got married to a young lady who I'd met at West Point in 1962 as a student right outside the gate of West Point. And we got married in 66 and headed to Fort Ord. And there, for just a short year, I commanded a basic training company, most of which the young men were heading off to Vietnam after they completed their basic and advanced training. It wasn't just the year after I got there, and we was alerted to go back to Vietnam as a Ranger Battalion advisor. However, before that occurred, they drew down on a bunch of captains, all with combat experience in Vietnam, to send to Korea. And we'll get into that a little more later. But at the time, the 2nd Infantry Division and the 7th Infantry Divisions in Korea had been stripped of NCOs and officers and even some equipment to keep Vietnam going early on. It was quick pool in a good location to move people into Vietnam. So the divisions had become quite short of combat vets. They had none. And of experienced officers, they had few. And at that time, in 66 to 69, the North Koreans decided that because we were trying to use those units in Vietnam and the South Koreans were about to deploy to Vietnam, that they would try to hold our troops and the South Korean troops in place. And it became a very, very active period. And I'll just jump ahead to say that between October 66 and October 69, 43 Americans, 299 South Koreans, and 397 North Koreans soldiers were killed in the DMZ. So it was a pretty active place for that three-year period.
It sure sounds like it. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom, and our topic with Colonel Bud Henry is fighting in Korea, particularly on the DMZ. Bud, you certainly know about fighting, and you certainly know about Korea. So to the topic of Korea, let's start by discussing the history of Korea since World War II. Japan basically controlled Korea at the end of World War II. Russia sort of liberated, or whatever you want to call it, the North, and the U.S. sort of liberated the South. And the nation was supposed to be reunited like Germany was supposed to be, but that didn't happen. Was there a demilitarized zone at the beginning, do you know?
There was more informal. It wasn't very heavily armed. As time went on from the mid-40s to 50, became more hostile. And then in 50, when the North Koreans invaded into South Korea, of course, it was all-out war for a few years. Finally, there was an armistice in July of 53. They finally signed an armistice at Panmunjom, which is still in existence as the center of the DMZ. And so from 53 on, it became probably the most heavily guarded border in the world at this point, and maybe with the exception of the Israeli border. When I got there, as I had mentioned a little earlier, the division, the 2nd Infantry Division, was lacking experienced and combat-hardened leaders. So about 20 of us came floating into the 2nd Infantry Division. The 7th got about the same. And we were all given rifle companies up on the DMZ. My rifle company in 1st Battalion, 38th Infantry, was located right on the gate that goes out to Panmunjom in an area called the Joint Support Area, which was an independent command of the United Nations. So I went from the United Nations east, and I occupied about 500 meters, which were trenched and bunkered with a fence in front of it, often a second fence, and then a one-kilometer dead zone, which was partially defoliated. And then the military demarcation line, which was literally a line drawn from the east coast to the west coast to Korea and divided Korea in two. And that border was only known by the signposts, which were every kilometer. So it was easy to blunder into North Korea if our patrols weren't careful. We were set up with bunkers along the fence. Beyond that, there were patrols that went out 24/7. There was always patrols in our sectors. And beyond that, there would be guard posts within the DMZ, which were heavily guarded. They were small fortresses, if you would. It was a very hot time. In 68, we had a number of incidents, including the Pueblo in late January. But earlier in January, I believe around the 20th, 31 North Koreans broke through the fence quietly, nobody knew, and were found 3 days later in front of the Blue House, which is the White House of South Korea. A fight all the way back to the DMZ. Of the 31, 28 were killed. One was captured, and two, we have no idea what happened. There were about 30 South Koreans killed in that fight, all the way back to the DMZ, and then three Americans, so it was a tough battle. There were other incidents during that time. Easter Sunday, Easter, there was a convoy going out to the Panmunjom, and North Koreans ambushed it. They shot up a three-quarter ton truck, and there were three killed and three wounded. So, again, they were vicious little people. I left there at the end of 68, Thanksgiving of 68, and I followed it afterwards. I had an interest in it, of course, and there were constantly people being killed. We have a West Point grad who was killed with an axe while he was trying to trim trees with some troops to clear some obsession.
And we'll talk about that when we come back. Bud Henry will stay with us. We're talking more about Korea. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's push-ups time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do every day. Then take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back.
This report is brought to you by the American Egg Board and the Egg Nutrition Center. February is American Heart Month, a perfect time to examine your dietary choices and determine if you are making the right decisions for your heart. You may not think of eggs as part of a heart-healthy diet, but this nutrient powerhouse is a perfect pair to whole grains, vegetables, and other heart-healthy foods. Decades of research have demonstrated that healthy adults can enjoy eggs without impacting their risk of heart disease. In fact, a recent study suggests eating one egg a day may reduce risk of stroke by 12%. Dr. Tia M. Raines, Executive Director at the Egg Nutrition Center.
Everyone loves the taste and convenience of eggs, and they should feel good about eating them, too. One large egg has varying amounts of 13 essential vitamins and minerals and high-quality protein, all for 70 calories. And don't toss the yolk. It contains most of the egg's nutrients, including choline, which has been linked to brain health.
For more information on eggs and an overall heart-healthy diet, visit eggnutritioncenter.org.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
Hunterton Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterton Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterton Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.huntertonhealthcare.org.
Advancing Hunterton is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterton County's businesses. Advancing Hunterton engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterton-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterton, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterton.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Colonel Bud Henry on the topic of the demilitarized zone in Korea. Okay, Bud, you and your company were on the DMZ patrolling a piece of it, and compared to Vietnam, open battles, it wasn't war. But compared to running patrols where you could get ambushed, shot whenever, it was. Is that a fair parallel?
Yeah, it was totally different, as intense in some ways, not quite as dangerous, but per square mile, it was much more dangerous. The North Koreans would come across from the north, of course, and they would plant mines where patrols would go. There were mine injuries, the small foot poppers. They would relocate our minefields. They were clever, and they were pretty good at that. And they would harass constantly. So even while you weren't always being shot at, you were being harassed. So they would come over and just rattle the troops that were in bunkers. Very cold in Korea. So at February at 3 in the morning, you're not feeling really good. And someone comes over and puts a couple rounds over your head, it makes your day go bad.
That's not the way I would like to start. Okay, the DMZ, how wide is it from north to south?
The DMZ is literally 1 kilometer each side of the MDL, they call it, the military demilitarized line.
Okay, so you had 1 kilometer on your side of it, and they had 1 kilometer on the other. So theoretically, there was no armed people in that area, but there were always armed people in that area, right?
Yeah, it could be patrolled. One of the idiosyncrasies of being in Korea is that the whole time I was there, when I was on duty on the DMZ, I had to wear a MP armband. Our troops all wore an MP armband that said MP and then had MP in Korean. Because the armistice says that the demilitarized zone can only be patrolled by military police. Well, you wouldn't put military police in there with pistols for, you know, you need combat infantrymen. So we were all military policemen for that gig.
So you were an honorary cop, huh?
Yeah, it was. It was pretty funny. I mean, when you get there and they hand you a MP badge, you go, what am I doing?
Did you give anybody a ticket?
No, I never gave tickets. There wasn't much speeding in the DMZ.
Okay, so
good hunting, though. One of the best preserves in the world because it has been closed off from the Yalu River north to the fence since 1950. And so it's become a preserve of a wonderful array of fowl and ground animals and such. And actually, the troops would go out hunting. There were hunting areas.
Wow. Well, that makes sense. All kinds of critters would survive in that kind of an environment.
Right.
So when you're on patrol, typically I would suspect that your patrols were what, squad or platoon size normally?
Yeah, they were anywhere from 5 to 10. Never large, never small. They were usually in a 5 to 10 range, a squad minus.
Okay. And I would presume you were never in, or only very rarely in, major firefights. It would be more of a 4 or 5 rounds exchanged one way, a couple return fire.
Yeah.
And rarely ever see who you're shooting at. Is that right?
Yeah, because normally you didn't engage for long times. When you bumped into somebody out there, there would be a quick fight, and everybody would back off quick because you don't want to get caught out there. You know, by that time, everybody's throwing their QRFs in there. Their quick relief forces go in. We all had quick relief forces with armored personnel carriers, and they would go racing in, and nobody wanted to be there when the other guy's quick reaction force got there first.
Did you often even see the people you were shooting at?
No. Sometimes you'd see a head or a body disappearing, but it wasn't like you were nose to nose like you were often in Vietnam.
Yeah.
But it was a dirtier kind of war in that it was all ambush. Everything was ambush. And so the encounter would be either you bump into him or he heard you coming and he goes into a quick ambush and then you get hit.
Did you set up ambushes and catch them?
Yes, we did the same thing, of course. We would go out into to our part of the DMZ. Our troops never crossed. We were not allowed to cross and had no desire to. But we did send out patrols that would lay in night ambushes because at night is when the North Koreans would try to get south through the fence. I don't know the statistic now, but I believe there's been thousands of penetrations of that fence or attempts to get through that fence. Our fence was not as sophisticated as it is today. And today it's a layer of electrified fences and sensors and lights. We didn't have lighting on the fence, so we were sitting there in the dark.
Okay. Well, so that's good and bad. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing the Korean DMZ with Colonel Bud Henry. Bud, I understand that today we don't have U.S. forces doing the patrolling as you did. They're part of a mixed U.S., South Korean, and maybe some other allies groups patrolling and doing the same kind of thing. Is that right?
Yeah, virtually, to the best of my knowledge, we have no Americans patrolling in the DMZ now. The positions are all occupied from one end to the other by South Korean troops. They're good troops. They're solid. And so they've replaced this. It's probably been 10 years. And the 2nd Infantry Division, the 7th, is no longer there. The 2nd Infantry Division is backed up mostly south of the Yalu River. The few that are in front of the river are generally assigned to liaison duty with the Koreans, or they're with the joint support group that is part of the UN contingent, although it's mostly American and some foreign and South Korean people.
You know, that war ended with a ceasefire, but the war didn't end. There's never been a peace treaty. So, in fact, that war is still on, right?
Yeah, the war's on. There's never been a treaty, and I don't know if there ever will be. I'm not so sure there will.
You know, we've just got a couple of minutes left. Certainly North Korea is a huge threat today, bigger than it was then, if for no other reason because they're better armed. Do you see it as scary as I do?
Yeah, they are. And not even convention arms. I think with convention arms, they have a big army, but their malnutrition, some of their equipment is pretty bad, pretty old and unsophisticated. But their nuclear threat is nasty. They're just not the kind of people I want to see having nuclear weapons that can reach either our troops in Korea or Japan or can reach to the United States. It's not a good situation.
You know, you've been there, and I haven't. But if we decide we have to take on North Korea, a ground war is almost mission impossible, isn't it?
I don't know if a mission impossible, but it's going to be a bloody war. And they've got about 1 million troops in uniform. They've got reserves. Pretty much anybody in the North is a soldier. I mean, they've all have some kind of a contingency duty in their reserves. But their standing army is large. Man for man, they're not anything like the American Army because they don't have, first of all, they're about 5 inches shorter than the average South Korean. They weigh 10, 15 pounds less. They're malnourished. And so they don't have a real staying power in that respect.
But it's still one heck of a terrain to have to fight over, isn't it?
A terrible terrain. I also did an exercise in 1980. I took a battalion over with a brigade, and we did an exercise with the ROK Army up in the northeast in Chuncheon. And that was a 2-month exercise in the winter, and it was February, March, mostly March. And it was terribly cold, and fighting in those conditions wouldn't be fun.
I agree. Bud, we've got less than 1 minute left. How about the Olympics? I don't see that as any kind of a peace thing, and I'm somewhat unhappy with the way the media is treating North Korea. What are your thoughts?
Well, I agree with that. I think that the media trying to glorify the sister of the dictator and the choir and the cheerleaders and going all goo-goo over how pretty the cheerleaders were in sync is ridiculous. Part of our press, unfortunately, is far bent on trying to discredit the U.S. and look at dictators as something that they can glorify.
I wish you were wrong, brother. Bud, thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our nation. I'm proud to call you friend and brother, but hey, we've been that for over 50 years.
That's for sure. Thanks.
Here's our Stand Tall Troop report. This is when we find an outstanding performance of duty, and we're privileged to honor two fine troops, Air Force Captain Charlotte Rabb and Staff Sergeant Gary Berkey of the 9th Special Operations Squadron, recently received the Distinguished Flying Cross for conducting an emergency aerial resupply to U.S. troops while under direct fire from the enemy. Both airmen were part of a six-man air crew on an MC-130J Commando 2 aircraft conducting an emergency resupply airdrop to a team of U.S. and coalition special operations forces who were under hostile fire in an isolated area in Afghanistan. Rabb acted as the combat systems officer while Berkey was the aircraft's loadmaster. Rabb had to make some recalculations while the aircraft went through an area where the enemy's small arms and anti-aircraft artillery could reach her aircraft with lethal effectiveness. Despite the aircraft taking fire, Rabb prepared the air crew to still deliver the resupply. Berkey readied himself to drop it out the back. "It did not occur to me that we were taking fire till the ramp and door opened," Berkey said. "I distinctly remember hearing the cracks of the bullets passing behind the aircraft. The only thing I could think of was that this resupply needed to be executed successfully. I was entirely focused on doing what I had to do to get that drop off." The airdrop bundle effectively landed within 50 meters of the Special Forces team, providing critical ammunition and supplies that directly contributed to the successful counterattack by the team. So stand tall, Captain Rabb and Sergeant Berkey. Frontlines of Freedom and all of our nation's patriots salute you. This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking cybersecurity with Tom Kelly. Then JAG John Mayer will discuss a move to free a wrongfully jailed combat vet. And Chaplain Steve Hookema will talk about selecting chaplains. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our Armed America Report. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, go somewhere and run some wind sprints through the snow if necessary. Then grab some protein and rehydrate with water. Finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.
So, how are you enjoying this latest stock market roller coaster ride? You've worked too long and too hard to let market volatility and a tired old spend-down strategy rob you of your retirement savings. David J. Scranton, host of the Income Generation television program, has dedicated his entire career to educating baby boomers how to avoid becoming prey to market volatility and the retirement spend-down trap. To teach you how to get off the roller coaster and transform a potential retirement spend-down into retirement income, David's now offering free copies of his latest book, Return on Principle, 7 Core Values to Help Protect Your Money in Good Times and Bad, to the first 1,000 boomers to respond to this message by calling 866-913-1234. Don't let market volatility ruin your retirement. Become part of the income generation. 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. Call now for your free book.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News.
The FBI acknowledged that some protocols were not followed after they obtained a tip in January that shooting suspect Nicholas Cruz had a potential of conducting a school shooting. Meanwhile, a former classmate of Cruz is coming out speaking about some of the things he did in his past school years.
I used to always hear stories about him throwing rocks through windows, pulling the fire alarm for fun. No one was really too close to him because it was always assumed that if this were to happen, it'd be him. Someone having the ability to instill that much terror in the people I love hurts.
The FBI said the caller had provided them with information about Cruz's gun ownership, desire to kill people, erratic behavior, and disturbing social media posts in January. Former Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney announced today that he will be running for a U.S. Senate seat being left vacant by retiring GOP Senator Orrin Hatch. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn Root. I was one of the biggest critics of Obama in the national media. Suddenly, I was under massive IRS attack. So I hired Sam Landis. Sam did an amazing job. We won twice. I didn't owe a penny. Thank you, Sam Landis. Many of you have IRS problems, and you've spent thousands with